Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're going to be talking with Larry Steibel. He's the Vice President of Board Options, Inc. And we're going to be talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's we've known each other a long time, Larry, and this is one of the areas that I know your organization has been focused on, is really helping individuals look at the value of becoming a board member. What got you into this industry?
Well, just like you, David, we do a lot of coaching, and sort of an archetype referral that we get is the following. David, you know, you're a great HR manager, and we're so glad we have you there, and you really contribute a lot on a functional basis. But we're at the senior management table and talking about the enterprise and where the enterprise is going, you don't have much value. In other words, you're perceived as tactical and not strategic. So I wish you were more strategic. And then the David gets says, yes, sir, but silently is very angry and says, look, you paid me to be a functional head. I'm a functional head. I do what I'm paid, and now you criticize me to do the things you paid me for to do. And then you ask me to be strategic. What does that mean? How do I do that? And so take the same conversation. David, you're wonderful. We're so glad we have you heading this functional of HR. But, you know, your contribution could be even so much higher if you were had an enterprise-wide perspective. And one of the ways to do that is to help you get on boards of directors. And we would like to help you do that. And so I've basically said the same thing, but your reaction to that is going to be very different.
No, there's no question. And look, a lot of people like to be on boards. They like the thought of it, right? It has a little prestige to it. But a lot of people don't know how to do it. That's probably the thing.
Right.
And they also say, oh, my gosh, it's going to take so much time. So, you know, when people come to you and they say, okay, I want to differentiate myself. I want to learn these things. How much time is this really going to take? How am I going to make this work, Larry?
Well, first, if you are talking about not all boards are the same. So take a look at there's a hierarchy of boards, and it goes from on the low end, your local social service agency, to the very highest end, which might be Fortune 500 public company. And what we do with clients is to say, okay, where are you on the board food chain? And then what's the next level up? I really think I could make a great contribution to Apple. I really do, because I'm very smart and I use their products and I think it's cool. But I've given up waiting for Apple to call me, and I've realized they're not going to call me. So where are you on the food chain? So let's deal with the elements of the food chain. So I ask your listeners to listen to the food chain, and then identify where are they, and then what's the next logical step. So the first is the local chamber of commerce, the local religious organizations, your local human service organizations, mental health centers, shelters for battered women. It's incredibly easy to get involved. It's incredibly easy to get on these boards. The problem often is getting off the boards. But you got to start somewhere. And so I would recommend, if you've got to start somewhere, this is the way to start. Two things. find out who else is on the board. You should ask. If it's a nonprofit, there is something called a Form 1099 that they are required to publish, and you can get it online for free on an organization called GuideStar.org. That's GuideStar.org. So you look at the nonprofit 1099, and you'll see who's on the board.
Well, Larry, let me just clarification. So this is for nonprofit groups only, correct? They have the 1099?
Well, when I'm talking about the board food chain, and you have to start somewhere, most of the people that we work with want to be on for-profit boards, but you got to start somewhere.
So when they go and they're asking for this information, they report this information of who's on the board itself. What are you looking for when you're looking at those, you know, individuals on the board?
At this level, the lowest level, you have to really believe in the mission. If you don't believe in the mission, don't get involved. Second is you have to believe that you're not the smartest person in the room. If you don't think there's anything you can learn from anybody else on this board, just don't get involved in it. Because part of the value of being on a board is to increase your professional and business networks. One of the things that I see with HR people is they often professionally hang out with only HR people. And this is a good way to meet non-HR people outside your industry and outside your sector on a professional basis. So that's those are the ways I would evaluate those kinds of board opportunities. The second thing I would do, I would insist on term limits, because sometimes these organizations do not have term limits, and so it gets very difficult for you to say goodbye without making sort of a political falderal about it. But if there are term limits and you say, I'm here to serve two terms of 3 years each or 2 years each, and then I'm going to be moving on, and you say it in advance, it makes it very easy to say goodbye. So that's the lowest level of the food chain.
And that's a good tip, too, by the way, in regards to, you know, setting the expectation up front, right, in regards to what you're willing to do, how much time and effort you're willing to put in. That makes a lot of sense. And we're talking with Larry Steibel, by the way. He's the vice president of Board Options, Inc. And we're talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. Okay, we've gone over the lowest level. What's the second level up?
The next level up would be the for-profit, family-dominated businesses. And there are thousands and thousands of them in the United States. And this is a transition time when some of the boomers are beginning to look at retirement, and there's a generational change occurring in the family business. And so it's a time of stress for many family businesses, and it's an excellent time to bring aboard a non-family outsider who can be more dispassionate and look at things. So this is kind of the next step up on the board food chain. You're not likely to find search firms helpful to you in getting to this level. It's really about networking with people who are on boards of family businesses or who own family businesses. And sometimes they actually may need convincing. Why would they want someone who's not a family member on their board, and as opposed to a consultant? If I talk to most of your listeners and ask them to write down on a piece of paper, what's your value for a board? They'll probably say, well, I know something about compensation, and compensation's important at board levels, and I know something about talent management and succession. That's great. But you could hire a consultant like David to come in and do compensation and do talent management. You don't need to bring David on a board of directors for that. So the question that you have to ask yourself if you're in HR is, what else have you got that you can bring? And one of the things that family businesses are looking for is perspective. When the family gets locked into emotional conflicts about siblings, because you're not part of the family, you can look at it more dispassionately and focus on the needs of the business. The second is bringing a longer-term perspective. Sometimes very many family members are just focusing on what do they need to do this quarter, this year. And your value in coming aboard these family businesses is to help them think in a longer term. Trust is the coin of the realm in family businesses, but that's sort of the next logical step. And again, your base is in Maine, and there's just lots of family businesses. So the next step up on the food chain would be private equity-dominated boards. These are companies that are no longer owned by families, but they may be owned by third parties. Could be venture capital firms, could be private equity firms, and they still need board people. And the way you get that is you network with private equity people. The next step up is small cap public companies. Next step up is mid cap public companies, and the final step up is large cap public companies. One of the things that boards are looking for, particularly large cap public companies, is women. Until recently, there were very few women on boards of directors. The Wall Street Journal had a survey of the Fortune 500, the largest 500 companies in the United States. Today, 75% of that group have at least two women on boards, and only 2% of Fortune 500 companies have all male boards. So 20% of the total board population of Fortune 500 are female, and that number is going to be increasing.
Larry, when you're looking at these levels, and you've basically provided six levels from nonprofit to for-profit family mm-hmm. to private equity to small cap,
right.
mid cap, large cap, is it traditional to start at the bottom and work your way up, or are there certain, you know, steps in regards to ways of looking at this and saying, I want to target X or I want to target Y? What is someone looking at this who's starting out and thinking to themselves, well, I might want to do nonprofit, but I'd really like to get into a family one to start with. Is that realistic? What's the thought process behind when you're looking at this in general?
I think if you think your greatest contribution is to a for-profit, privately held business and you want to focus on that, that's fine. But you've had no prior board experience, then you really need to start reading it and to reading about boards of directors, or going to meetings of boards of director governance. Because, again, for many people who are employed by companies, what goes on in the boardroom is kind of a black box. They really don't know. And just because you're smart and just because you're dedicated doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good board member. So there's a tradecraft to board governance. You need to learn the craft of governance. One possible resource is our own website, boardoptions.com. And please spell it right. I got a call from somebody who said, I don't get it. I can't find your website. I said, how do you spell it? And he said, BOREDOPTIONS. I said, no. We wouldn't spend the money for that URL. BOARD, boardoptions.com. We have a section called Nose in Fingers Out, which has all sorts of articles about questions that board members should be asking.
So when an individual is looking and saying, hey, I'm interested in this. This is something that can certainly help my career. Mm-hmm. They need to start thinking about, I know, a marketing plan, right? Something that they can say, hey, I need some help to think about how to put this together. And so tell me a little bit about why first somebody should have a marketing plan to do this. And then we can get into the steps and so forth as to what the plan might look like.
Well, in terms of why someone needs a marketing plan is, this is like any campaign, just like you do for your outplacement work or we do for our outplacement work. In the end, it's won by smartly designed, well-executed campaigns rather than good intentions. And so it has to be a long campaign. The second, and many people just don't believe it when I say it, it could take 2 years, because what you're doing is planting seeds, and some of the seeds will take time. most board positions are filled through word of mouth. So you, and if you're, and particularly when you're in HR, if you're a director of HR, they don't necessarily think of you in terms of boards. So you've got to begin to change their people's perception of you. So the first thing to do is your board executive resume. Your listeners, being HR people and entrepreneurs, have read hundreds of resumes in their careers, and they all, you know, start up results-oriented, seasoned executive, blah blah blah. But a board resume is going to look different. It's going to really talk about your industry experience. It's going to talk about your what can you do to help full board discussions. If you're looking for the for-profit world, much of the actual work in boards is done by committees. What committees are you qualified and capable of being on? And so that's how you focus on it. Again, it's hard to do this on the radio, but for role models, what I would suggest your listeners do is to go to our website. It's all free. Our website is boardoptions.com, and then on the right side of the homepage is something called the Board of Directors Talent Bank. And we have 800 members of our board talent bank. You just scroll through that and look, use that as a model for your board executive resume. Now, the board resume is the same as a traditional resume, but usually where there's an executive summary, what we have on the board options board talent bank, those would be the statements that would go into an executive resume. And then the rest of the resume would be traditional. Remember, if you're from HR, people think of you as an HR person. They don't necessarily think of you as what could you contribute to a board. So you've got to make the case in the executive summary. So that's issue number one. By the way, if anybody wants to take the time to try to do it a draft, I'll be glad to take a look at it and give them a half hour on the phone, no charge. The other thing that you can do to begin your board campaign is on boardoptions.com. On the left side of the landing page, there's something called Submit Your Credentials. And there are a number of, you click on there, and there are a number of questions that you answer. And answering those questions will help you begin to articulate what is your contribution to be on a board of directors? What's your value proposition to be on a board of directors? So if you could do that, plus submit your resume, that would be very helpful. Please do not answer question 7. That asks to list your contacts that you would tap into. I don't need to see that. That would not be appropriate for you to answer that question, but answer all the other questions. I'll be glad to spend up to a half an hour at no charge.
We're talking with Larry Steibel. He's the Vice President of Board Options, Inc. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB and the News Station 100.5.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Larry Steibel. He's the Vice President of Board Options, Inc., and we are talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. Larry, thank you very much for being on the show today, and it's really a topic that I know I get a lot of people asking about. they say to themselves, you say, you know, I'd love to give some time on a board. I'd like to. And some people will say, oh, I'd like to make some money on boards. I'd like to get to a point where I can really be a contributor on a board, but I just don't know how. And so your group, Board Options, Inc., at boardoptions.com, is a way that certainly somebody can be doing that. And on your last segment, you talked about providing a half hour of somebody to give them information on the program and look at what they have to offer. I think that's awesome that you'd be willing to do that. And on hrpowerhour.com, we will have a link and we'll have all this information right after the show so that somebody can go there directly. So thank you very much for that.
My pleasure, David.
All right, so let's talk about the first steps in your board marketing program. Tell me a little bit about if a listener is interested in either developing board options for herself or himself or expanding the board options that they currently have, what's the first thing they really need to do or take the next step on?
The first step is to articulate what is your value to be on a board. As I said in the last half of the section, most people at HR say, well, my value is I understand compensation and I understand succession planning and talent management, but those are skills you could hire a David Chulo or a Larry Stibel for. You don't need to bring them on a board. So what else can you do for a board? And so you need to think about that before you go to the marketplace. Again, people can go to boardoptions.com, go to the Board of Directors Talent Bank, and scroll through 800 executive summaries of board people. And they talk about what their value proposition is at a full board level and what is their value proposition at a committee level. I also mentioned at boardoptions.com there's a tab called Submit Your Credentials, and it asks a series of questions to help you get focused about what is your value proposition to be on a board of directors. The next step is to talk with your CEO or talk with the general counsel of your company to say, is there anything from the company point of view that says that you should not serve on the board of a non-competing company? And so before you undertake this journey, cover yourself and make sure that you're not going to get yourself into trouble. This is very much a culture issue. One of our clients is McKinsey & Company, and their attitude is, if you are a partner, you cannot be on any board. You can't even be on a nonprofit board. We don't want to go anywhere near anything that could be a potential conflict. So you need to find that right ahead of time. There are also CEOs who really, if there's going to be anybody on the board of a bank, it's going to be them. It's not going to be you. And so you might as well find that out at step number one rather than step number 13. The next is to go to the market. So let's assume that you have a board resume. Here's what I would suggest you do as your bumper sticker. All good campaigns are won by simple messages. And the issue is, what is your simple messages? You know, for example, I'm not trying to get political, I'm just trying to use this as an example. When Obama ran for president, his simple message was change. When George W. Bush ran for president, his simple message was compassionate conservatism. Simple messages can be very powerful, particularly with busy people. What I would suggest for you is your simple message is, I'm very busy, I have time to serve on one for-profit board, and I want to make it a good one. That's it. The reality is, given most of your listeners' lives, they only have time to serve on one board anyway. So it's probably true. But you don't want to make yourself too open to serve on any board. Focus on what it is that you want. In the last segment, I suggested there's a food chain. Where are you on the food chain now, and what's the next logical step up? And again, for many of your listeners who may be in Maine and New Hampshire, there's going to be lots of family-dominated, privately held businesses that are looking at succession leadership and you could be of assistance in those businesses.
Larry, you brought up the point of time, and I think we discussed that people say sometimes, and do I have time to do this? Could you provide maybe an outline of what the amount of time typically a board takes for an individual? What are we talking about? One night a week, you know, twice a month? What kind of is the overall arching theme of board time, depending, of course, upon the organization? I recognize I'm asking you to generalize a little, but I think people would like to know what it really would take them in their own personal time.
It's a great question, David, but I don't have a great answer. If you're looking at public companies, particularly large cap companies, it generally is 150 hours a year, or plus another 150 hours when you're on the audit committee. And it's about one day, you know, it actually works out to maybe one 8-hour day a month. So it's a piece of work. When you're looking at, let's say, an early stage company that is looking for its first round of financing, it may be intense, or there may not be very much going on. So it's hard to say. Whatever you're going to be doing when you're a candidate, you want to make sure you get a schedule of the board meetings a year in advance so that you can plug it into your schedule.
No, that's great advice, because obviously you need to be there. It's not like you can really opt out for that one particular moment, right? I mean, you have to you have to engage for that time that it's going to be there, or you're not going to be able to really be effective and really understand what it's all about. We talked a little bit about time, and somebody's going to say, well, hey, will I be compensated for this?
Well, David, I'm going to start talking like a consultant, and the answer is it depends. If you're looking at a public company, the compensation is clearly defined in the proxy statements, which you can get through sec.gov. Just look at the proxy and they will tell you what the compensation is. It's usually in the form of some base and form of equity. If you're looking at a privately held company, it's usually going to be in the form of cash. And how much is going to be, I think that's really up for negotiation. As you move up the chain, it becomes some sort of combination of cash and equity. And here's a kind of rule of thumb. If you're talking about a board of advisors, which we'll talk to a little bit later, that's about 0.5%, about half of 1% of equity. If you're looking at a board of directors, the equity is anywhere between 1% and 3%. And the people who get 3% are really well-known industry figures. Most of us are going to be somewhere in the 0.5% to 1% range. The negotiation is really going to be over the payout of that 1% of equity. So, for example, if I'm on David's company, I would actually, you know, obviously I would like you to pay me that 1% of your equity in your company on the first day that I show up for the first board meeting. However, it's in David's interest to stretch it out because he's not sure that I'm really going to make a contribution to the board. So you might say, well, take that 1% and one-third of it I'll pay you on the first day, and one-third I'll pay you after a year, and then the next third I'll pay you after 2 years. So it's in David's interest to stretch it out. It's in my interest to shorten it, and so we negotiate the timing, not the amount of the payout.
And we're talking, of course, about public companies. What is it for, like, nonprofits? Certainly, I'm on a number of nonprofit boards. You are as well. That's a whole different world.
Totally different. Not only are you not going to get paid, but very often there is an explicit understanding that you will pay. So if you're on the board of certain nonprofits, there's an expectation that you're going to make a donation every year of a certain amount. And increasing that's getting much more explicit.
You know, from a ethical standpoint of an individual who's working for a company and then goes to work for a, in terms of on a board of a nonprofit or for profit, whatever it may be. You know, typically there are so many options, right? And there are some that may be controversial in terms of, you know, for the organization. Are there restrictions in terms of a companies allowing people to really say, hey, you can't go to be on a board for XYZ company because it's a, you know, has some ethical or political tinge to it, but you can go to another one? Is there an ethical question in regards to that for the organization or the individual?
Well, I said the first step in the marketing campaign after you've done your board summary is to go to the president and or the general counsel and say, are there any problems with me serving on one board, and describe that kind of company, you know, from the food chain. Most likely the president or the general counsel will say, in theory, no, but why don't you, when you get a specific board, why don't, let's discuss it. And again, it's understood that if you're an employee of a company, you cannot accept a board opportunity unless it's approved by the employer.
A lot of individuals say to themselves, I want to be on a board because I want to network with others and I want to get to know people outside of my, you know, my industry, and it will make me a more well-rounded person. You kind of implied that, obviously, when we spoke a little bit about in the last segment. How important do you feel that is for someone's career? You know, we're talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. We're talking with Larry Stibel from Board Options, Inc. Tell me, how important do you think that networking is to their
career? I think it's extremely important, and again, if we're just looking at what is in your listener's self-interest, David, I think that may be number one. Let me give you an example. There's a fellow, and his name was Ron, and he was a vice president of marketing for a consumer products company, very, very low-tech. They make labels. You can't get more low-tech than that. They make labels. And he was on the board of a high-technology company. And for one reason or another, the board decided to fire the CEO. And now they're looking, we need somebody that we trust to be the CEO and to help repair the damage that the other CEO did. And they looked around and they found this guy, Ron, and they said, why don't you become the CEO? And so he became the CEO of a high-tech company when his entire background was low-tech manufacturing. No recruiter would have ever suggested him as a candidate, but because he had the trust of the board, he got that opportunity. When we look at HR people, I find, David, that many HR people, professionally, they hang out with other HR people. That's fine if the entire HR market is expanding. But if the economy is going through a recession or is flat, you want to be known beyond the HR community. In addition, many companies have employees sign non-compete agreements that make it impossible for them to work within their sector for a certain period of time. So this is a great way to expand your network outside HR and expand your network outside your industry or sector.
We're talking with Larry Stibel. He's the vice president of Board Options, Inc. at boardoptions.com, and that's boardoptions.com. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and the News Station 100.5.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hey, And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com. And now on 100.5 FM WLOB. And we're talking with Larry Steibel today. He is the vice president of BoardOptions.com. And we're talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. You know, Larry, we talked about in the last segment about individuals and networking, and that people are going to be doing this not only to increase their career, but that the networking part of this is an important part of their career building. Talk to us a little bit about networking. I mean, we all know what networking is. Some of us are more adept at it than others. What is different about networking in regards to looking for a board position versus necessarily looking for a career position, if at all?
Sure. There are lots of differences. One is, again, what is your bumper sticker? What is your value proposition to be on a board? We recommend that you say, I have time in my career to be on one board, and I want to make it a good one, and that's why I'm coming to you. And my value proposition to be on a board is blank. Keep in mind that compensation and your understanding of people and management of people and talent, these are skills we can hire a consultant to help us with. What else can you do? How else can you help a board? That's the challenge that you need to be thinking through. The first thought that people have when they're thinking about boards is to talk to recruiters. And recruiters tend to be one of the worst channels. I know you, David, you do recruiting, and I do recruiting. But usually when recruiters have assignments, those assignments are very, very specific. And unless you absolutely, positively have those specific credentials their client is looking for, the recruiter is not going to talk to you. The second issue is that for many of your listeners, David, their addressable market's more likely to be privately held companies that are not going to spend the money to use recruiters, but they're going to go through their own networks, which is why networking is so important. The third issue in networking is you've got to change perceptions of you from, oh, yes, here's David, he's the HR person, to, oh, yeah, here's David, here's somebody who could help us as a company on an enterprise-wide level basis, and, oh, by the way, he does have expertise in compensation and talent management. Those are nice additions to have, but those are not going to be the primary drivers of why somebody would want to bring you on a board. It's your perspective. It's your business judgment. It's your ability to look at both the asset side and the liability side of a business that they're going to be looking at. It's your objectivity that they're going to be looking for. So recruiters, I think, are not a very good resource. What is a good resource? Lawyers, particularly corporate attorneys, who often are the valued advisors, the conciliaries to their CEOs. When there's a board, often a board will bring in an attorney to serve as secretary to the board, and so it's the lawyer who's taking notes at the meetings and distributing the notes afterwards. And the lawyer will often know when the vacancies will appear before anybody outside the boardroom knows. And good lawyers, just like good consultants, David, are always looking for ways to show their clients that they are adding value outside their particular discipline of law. So if you network with attorneys, particularly corporate-type attorneys, and talk about what value you can bring, one day an attorney will say, I can go to my client and say, we have a board opening. I know we're looking for someone who understands something about succession planning and leadership. This person might be a useful addition. I'm going to send you her resume. Maybe she's a good fit, maybe she's not. That's a board decision, but I'm just looking to save you some money. And so that's why I would really focus on attorneys.
You had mentioned also, I believe, accountants is another area you thought would be a good area. Is that correct?
I would say accountants are not a good area. ever since Enron and the collapse of one of the big five CPA firms, accountants are extraordinarily sensitive to potential conflicts of interest. Remember, anyone who's going to be on the board of a for-profit company is likely to be on the audit committee. And so if a partner in an audit firm recommends Susie for the board, and then Susie is later on the audit committee, and the audit committee is deciding whether or not to keep the CPA firm or not, it creates a presumption of a conflict of interest. And accountants are extraordinarily sensitive to this, and so they often will not be necessarily good sources of referral.
So when you're on your campaign and you're out marketing, and you've talked about attorneys, you've talked about not using recruiters or accountants, how active should you be on social media, such as LinkedIn or any of the other social media sites having to do with this type of campaign?
I am not finding it that useful. Most board members are in their 60s, and they're going to be using more traditional, who do you know, who's a member of my club, who's a member of my community, rather than sort of Facebook and LinkedIn. I think if you're younger and you're looking for a job, you need to have a social media campaign, but for boards of directors, I'm not sure it's going to be all that useful for you.
If you're looking at like a tech company or someone that maybe has a more younger demographic, do you still see that demographic in regards to the board is still in their 50s or 60s?
Sure, yes.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to make sure, because I mean, people ask these questions, as you're moving up the chain, right? We talk about keeping your social media, quote unquote, clean and making sure that anything that shouldn't be there is taken off. That still applies, of course, because people are going to research you and look at who you are, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And if you go on LinkedIn, there are a number of interest groups that focus on boards of directors.
Do you think it's worth signing those into those?
I haven't found them all that useful, but you could. Maybe your listeners' experience will be different than mine.
So when we're talking about doing this and looking at the campaign, how long does it typically take for somebody to go from the start, at the beginning of, saying, okay, I'd like to do this, to maybe getting on a board, assuming that we're not talking nonprofit, which is fairly kind of easy to get on?
I tell my clients, you have to give it about 2 years. And they don't believe me, but it really takes that long, because what you're doing is planting seeds, and sometimes it takes a while for those seeds to germinate. So you have to think about this as a long-term campaign rather than I'm going to do this and then 6 months later I'm going to be on a board. It's probably not going to work out that smoothly. Now let's talk about other avenues. One is attorneys. The other thing, and to be really careful with, is ask attorneys for referrals to other attorneys that you do not know. So sometimes you may know an attorney in one firm, but you don't know the attorney in the office next to that attorney. And there's a kind of a real paradox when dealing with attorneys. Attorneys are really clever with words and very sensitive about the meaning of words. And the word referral and the word reference sound the same, but they have very different meanings. So, for example, David, you and I have known each other for more than 10 years. And if I, as an attorney, introduce you to my client, it is not a referral. It is going to be perceived as a reference, since I know you. That puts me in a win-lose situation. If you're added to the board and you do a great job, that's great. I win because I made the introduction. On the other hand, if it turns out that you're horrible and you do all sorts of bad things, I lose, and then my client is going to say, Larry, why didn't you tell me this about David? On the other hand, if I say to my client, I've never met David Chulo, but he was introduced to me by my partner, And on paper, David Shula looks like a really good fit for this board. I'm not making a reference. I'm making a referral. That puts me in a win-win situation. If David is brought into the board and works well, that's great. If, on the other hand, David is a disaster, nobody's going to blame me. So the paradox is you're going to find the best value for attorneys is to refer you to attorneys you don't know. And the attorneys that you do know may not be as helpful as you might think.
So during that 2 years while you're looking and networking and connecting, how do you stay engaged in the process? How do you know you're making headway? What are some of the techniques you would say are showing you that you're heading in the right direction?
It's sort of like when you and I are doing outplacement with candidates. If your goal is to get a job, you will be disappointed. You will feel frustrated. The goal should be to get as many interviews as you can, and the probability is you can't get a job without an interview, and so it's a good marker. And so we will tell people the goal is to get as many interviews as you can, and the more board interviews you get, the better you're going to be in interviewing for board positions. So set your sights on how many interviews are you getting for boards. Another resource for networking would be people who are already serving on boards. And when boards are looking for other board members, they first go through their own networks. So you want to be networking with people who are on boards. Start with your local church or your civic organizations you belong to. Again, if somebody's on LinkedIn, look up their profile. If they're on boards, they usually mention the boards that they're on. So then you can network with people who are on other boards of companies.
We're talking with Larry Stiebel. He is the Vice President of Board Options, Inc. We're talking about developing and expanding board options in your career. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB at 100.5 FM. And you're listening to David Shulo talk about developing and expanding board options in your career with Larry Stiebel. He is the Vice President of Board Options, Inc. or boardoptions.com. Larry, we're getting into the last segment here, and I want to wrap up with you about something that people certainly think about when they're about ready to join boards, and that's the risk involved. What is the risk, and how do you mitigate it?
Well, the first is, here in America, you know, stuff happens, and people tend to be very litigation happy. So you want to make sure that you cover yourself financially, and you also cover your reputational risks. So let's deal with both of these. One of the ways to cover your financial risks is don't serve on a board of directors, but serve on a board of advisors. From a legal standpoint, that's very different. If you're on a board of directors, you are required to have an understanding of the financial background and to be making decisions that affect the company. If you're on a board of advisors, there is no such legal requirement. So your liability is reduced. Again, if you're looking at an early stage company that might go someplace or may go no place or could go bankrupt, being on a board of advisors is one of the ways to mitigate your risks. Second, if you're going to be on a board of directors, you do want to insist on director and officer liability insurance. Director and officer liability insurance, and this also includes if you're on the board of a nonprofit organization as well. I know, for example, you and I are on the board of a small company. It's really designed not to make money, but there's still director and officer liability insurance to cover the financial risks. What are the financial risks? Again, in America, we have the right to life, liberty, and ability to sue anybody that we want to sue for any reason we want. Whether the lawsuit is frivolous or not, you have to hire an attorney to defend yourself. And it's the legal fees that can kill you, not necessarily the damages in the lawsuit. So the D&O insurance is important to you to cover your legal costs. What you will hear from the board is, don't worry, we have D&O insurance, it's adequate. Don't take their word for it. Find an insurance broker or an attorney that can independently verify this is a decent D&O insurance coverage that will protect you. Another thing that is going to protect you, again, this is reputational risk, is for many of your listeners, David, they're going to be on boards of privately held, family-dominated businesses. I always recommend that prior to the first day of your meeting, you write a letter of resignation and you leave the date out and you say to the CEO, I'm here to make a contribution. The moment you think that I'm just warming a seat and not really contributing, I want you to date the letter and give it back to me and I'm out of here. At the same time, I have a copy of my resignation letter. The moment I feel I'm not being taken seriously, I'm going to date my copy of the letter and I'm going to give it to you. If you start the relationship that way, you're going to get much more respect. It shows that you're serious about being a good board member rather than just being co-opted by the CEO. You want to take a strong stance, and that will enhance your reputation. But the other issue is if the board is moving in a direction that you feel jeopardizes the company or could jeopardize your reputation, you date the letter, you sign it, you give it to the CEO and say, I told you I would be doing this, so let's not have any drama, I'm just out of here. Again, you want to cover yourself for financial risks and reputational risks.
Those are great advice pieces for you, Larry. I mean, those really are good advice. Are there any other suggestions you want to give listeners?
Yeah. One of the reasons that you want to be on a board is to change how you are perceived by your boss. If your boss just sees you as an HR person who doesn't have much of a contribution beyond HR, you have limited value in the company. Your advice is going to be sought only on very functional-oriented problems. If you're on a board, you are going to be perceived as having some enterprise-wide experience, and your advice is going to be taken more seriously. So that's another reason that you want to look at being on a board.
Larry, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I want to remind listeners that right after the show, you can go to hrpowerhour.com. There you'll see some information in regards to where you can reach Larry. Remember, he asked you if you're interested to provide him a resume plus a bio form, which you can find at boardoptions.com. And he will provide 30 minutes of free consultation in regards to whether or not you're a great candidate to get into the Board Options program. Larry, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.